first ball field in this in World War One.
Yeah. Tell me something about some of those old Washington players that you saw in World Series. Bucky Harris.
Well, Bucky, he was a young fellow, you know. He was only 24 years old, I think he was, when they made him manager.
Yeah.
And I didn't know Bucky. I wasn't around Bucky too much. I didn't play against him. Passed the day with him.
Yeah. Goose Gosselin.
Well, Goose was, he could hit the ball a long way, and he, Goose was a good curveball hitter. I remember that. We played the Washington club in spring training at different time. Come north with him, you know. And he had good power. Now, I can tell you a tale about Goose. He was supposed to be fast earlier. Mm-hmm. Later on, his legs gave out a little bit. But we were at Tampa. We were staying at the Tampa Bay Hotel, and so was Washington club. And we got an argument. Out on the porch there, you know how they used to get on the porch, you know.
Yep.
And they said Carlton was faster than anybody we got on the ball club. Hmm. And we got together because I knew who was fastest man. Now, there wasn't no argument about it to me. And I got two or three of the boys, and I said, let's take them up on that. They said, well, who's faster than you? I said, Bill Terry. They said, no. I said,
you're kidding.
Really? Yes, he is, dude. So he played around 187, 199.
Yeah.
Well, when we went out there, you know, and McGraw didn't know anything about it. Anyway, we got out there and got up around home plate, and here he'd come, you know, and got him on the line, got him set out down there, and that Washington bunch was just sitting back there. Well, they started and here they went. Garvin didn't finish. When Terry passed him, he quit.
I'll be doggone.
He just had to run off and left.
I would never have thought
fast. Of Terry was, he was nearly as fast as one of the first bases of the Wayne boys.
That's saying something.
Especially, I used to get on, we grew together so long, you know, I used to get on him all the time. I said, yeah, I said, you might outrun sometime. I said, you see a base hit in sight, you'll run like the
devil. Yeah, I think anybody will try as.
Terry was a all-around ball player, one of the best ball players I ever saw.
Yes, he must have been.
He could feel, and no doubt about it, hitting.
Yeah.
And he had a strong arm because he could have stayed up there pitching. He was a case like Babe Ruth.
Ossie Bluesy.
Ossie was a good fielding third baseman. He was a good, smooth fielder.
Yeah.
And had a good pull and hand throw to first base. And a fair hitter.
Joe Judge.
Joe was, he was one of these, nice fellas.
Yeah.
He a good fielder. Good fielder.
Yeah, he was a slick fielder.
He didn't get too long ball, but he'd peck you to death out there. But he did look good around that first base.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a big man, first base.
Yeah. And, Roger Peckinpah.
Well, Roger was on his last legs then, too.
Yeah.
See, I believe that series, the 24 series, when he made so many errors.
26 was it?
26.
Against Pittsburgh. 25. Yeah.
Yeah, he was on his
made eight errors in the 25 series. Joe Cronin.
Well, as I said, Joe was young like himself. And he was a good hitter. He had some power.
Mm-hmm.
He was in that five bunch of Hubble struck out then at All-Star game in 34.
Yeah,
and Joe,
sure was.
He was a good fielder and had a good arm.
Yeah.
And a good hitter.
Joe Kuhl.
I don't know too much about him.
Yeah.
He was first baseman, wasn't
he? Yeah.
No,
I may talk with him. I haven't gotten the final answer. He's out in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. When I make a swing around and start back home, I'll contact him. Heine Manush.
Well, I don't know too much about him either.
Luke Sewell.
Luke, I knew him, was about his ball playing. I wasn't around him enough to see.
I'm talking to him later. He's in Akron now. And I'm talking to Joe, too, his brother.
Joe's still in Oskaloosa.
Oskaloosa. Yeah. And Rick Stevenson is down there.
Yeah, old Rick.
Yeah.
You heard the tale about Joe and Rick in Alabama, don't you?
No.
Not a part of the ball game. Joe was quarterback and Rick was a ball carrier. And it was hot, and they said they were both, they were just tired, the whole team and all like that, said the only one could make anything was Rich. I said, get up there, and that's when it's calling signal. And Joe would call a signal, give it to Riggs. Give it to Riggs. Finally, Riggs told him, said, Joe says, give it to somebody else, so I can't move.
I'll remind him of that. Mel Ott has to be one of the all-time good hitters of the National
League. He was a good hitter. Yeah. Had, he, listen, don't overlook his fielding.
I was going to say, and a fielder too.
He had an arm out there. I expect Joe Moore had the strongest arm, but Mel had the quickest release. Mel had that a good arm with a quick release, and that's hard to beat.
That is hard to beat, Joe.
And he was just as accurate. We caught him in the second base here on plays you wouldn't even think about.
O'Doul was a great hitter, but not that much of a fielder.
No, he couldn't run, he couldn't throw, and he liable to hit you five hits and then drive, then let in two or three. But playing like they did on him, O'Doul was a great hitter. You bet you was a great hitter. I don't know about him pitching. They said he started out as a pitcher,
but he didn't do too much there. Glenn Wright says, I think O'Doul could, and Babe Herman too, I think they could hit with their eyes closed.
I think so. Get out of bed here.
How good a catcher was Bill Dickey, from what you saw?
From what I saw, Bill was just one of those slow-going fellows and ended up beat your brains out. He was a good hitter. He was a good clutch hitter. And he threw the ball better than a lot of them thought, because he didn't have too strong an arm, but he had a quick release.
That's more important.
He had something on that release. I don't care how hard you throw that ball to second base, if it's doing this and that, that's no good. But try to throw that ball. I like Gus Mancuso. Gus had a good, strong, quick release, and the way he'd throw that ball, it'd come at just light as a feather.
Oh boy.
Just light as a feather. Now Hogan, big Hogan, you know.
Shanty
Hogan, he was just opposite. He threw three quarters and he just beats your hand to death. And another thing, when it goes in like that, that runner gets there at the same time.
That's right.
But Gus is just light as a feather.
I wrote to Gus, he lives in Houston now, but he didn't reply, so I'm not getting to talk to him. Who was the best right-handed hitter you ever saw in
Hornsby?
Everybody says that.
Oh, yes.
Best left-handed hitter.
That brings on a lot of things, because carry anybody that hits 400 has got to be a great
hitter. Got to be great. Paul Wehner.
Paul Wehner. A little Lloyd Wehner, just because he didn't get any extra base hits and all. But let's see how many runs he scored and how many times he got on a base and how many hits he got.
He's almost right with Paul,
You talk about your right hand hitters too. That Chick Heavy was quite a.
You can pound that ball.
He can knock you off that infield.
Yeah. Who was the best right-handed pitcher in your day in the National League?
Well, I hit against Dazzy Vance. He was fast. But the best right-hand pitcher.
What about the left hand? That's got to be Carl.
Well, I never hit against.
I know.
I was lucky.
No, I'm not saying that you hit against.
Oh, the best one I ever saw? Oh, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Who was the toughest pitcher for you to hit?
Charlie Brute.
Really?
For the Cubs.
Great pitcher.
You know, he had that short arm. He was a short arm pitcher. No, he was just McGinnis. That's all there was to it.
Well, he was a great pitcher, too.
He stood out there and on the mound one Sunday afternoon in Chicago. And the game wasn't at stake or anything like that. And he just stood up and he said, here, hit it. I took the biggest cut you ever saw and it went straight up in the air. I could not hit the guy. The only time that I did hurt him, was after I moved to third base there. And I believe it was a 33. It had to be 33. But I wasn't taking out the pinch hitting very much. And we go down the latter part of that ball game. And we got a couple of men on base, and I told Bill, I said, you know, I don't hit this guy. I said, if you got somebody, you go up and hit against him. He said, I'll go on up there. And I got a base hit and hurt him. That's the only time that I got on it, I hurt him.
Who was the among the easiest pitchers for you to hit?
French.
Larry?
Larry.
Great.
You ask him. When you see him, you
ask
him.
All right, I will.
I beat him. Often I beat him a ball game. If they were in two or three runs, we went two or three runs up, I beat him every time.
You kept him from winning 200 games.
That's right, I guess so.
He won 197, you know.
Well, I know the one Sunday afternoon in the Polo Grounds, we had a doubleheader with him. Now, I've forgotten now whether he started a ball game, but I think he went in about the middle as a relief pitcher because the game went 11 innings.
Mm-hmm.
And the last 11th inning, there was one pitch he could throw me in spite of the tickets, and I didn't lay for it. And I hit a home run to right center up and stay in the Polo Grounds, beat him 11 minutes. And we're coming back on the second game, Burkhalter was pitching left-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And on his first pitch, I hit the pitch, broke my bat, and hit it in that Chinese place down there in the Polo Grounds for a home run. That's where the game ended up 1-0. We beat both games that day.
Oh.
But Larry, I just beat his dreams out of Pittsburgh one day. He was down second base. I don't know whether they got a double or this.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he was on second base. And just the inning before, he turned the Bill and my cap around. I mean, he gave me a good one. And he got out and he says, I'm glad I didn't hit you. He says, they told me on the bench I didn't have just enough to throw at you. I said, I don't give a dog come, Larry. I don't blame you the way I've hit you. I'd be busting somebody too.
Right. Now, let's see if you can give me an all-star National League team for the years you were in the league, starting at first base. Who would you put?
I have to go with, you said I was too much for my home club.
Oh, your home club was one of the powerhouses.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
First base, I have to go with Terry over anybody else. Now,
you can't argue with that.
Along about that time there, when Terry was hitting so much and playing like that, one of the best fielders that's ever been up there on that first base was Charlie Graham.
Oh, sure. And then there's Jim Bottomley.
And Bottomley and Terry were hitters. Charlie won the 300.
Charlie hit close to 300, but he wasn't a power hitter.
But I'd have to take Terry over Jim Bottomley.
I played
more with him.
Yeah, you know him better.
He was a great first baseman.
What about second base?
Now, second base, you got some French in there and Hornsby.
Yeah, it's a question of whether you want the fielder and the fighter and the all-around player or the hitter, which Hornsby was. Hornsby didn't match French in the field, did he?
No.
It'd be hard to do. What about shortstop?
Well, I'd have to go along with Glenn Wright.
Would you?
All around.
Yeah, I don't.
Hitting
I
don't, and.
I'm not surprised.
Everything there. He had a strong arm. Gee, he had a strong arm.
Yeah. He claimed.
Third base is pie. Train, there's no doubt about that.
Third base is pie. That's right. And three outfielders. Without much relation to which field they played.
Well, that's going to be hard. You'd have to take between the Paul and Lloyd.
Mm-hmm.
Takakawa.
Yeah.
Ross, yeah, well, that's Gail Ross, you know.
Yeah, Ross. Maybe Mel Lott.
Mel Lott.
Yeah.
And you'd have to bring him with Ducky in on that. Ducky, maybe.
Yeah, you can't leave him out.
Yeah. You can't do it. You can't pick three.
No, that's not fair. All right, what about the catchers? Was there one that stood out?
Well, Lopez was pretty good.
He sure was.
He sure was. Was one of the best, the one that going on, the two of them, going on after you all the time on the beach if you wasn't careful, was Gabby Hartnett.
I expected that.
And, he managed Philadelphia there for a while, too. He was in Cincinnati. Jimmy Wilson.
Yeah.
He was smart. He was like Lopez. He was like Lopez.
Yeah.
Now, Lopez had a habit, And I can't think of what I want to say, but he could catch that ball up against the fence, up against the stands.
The way he could go in there
and kind of slide on his knees there and catch that ball right up against that fence where the other people would slide away from it and not catch it.
Yeah, yeah.
He was extra good at that.
He had a knack for doing that.
And he had that quick throw, quick release.
Yeah. All right. And left-handed pitcher would be Hubbell. You're having trouble settling on your right-handed pitcher.
Although I hit Dazzy fairly good, he was so big and all. Still, that wouldn't, of course, I think.
Was Dazzy better than Dizzy?
Well, at the time, yes. If Paul don't hurt that arm, he's going to be the best pitcher.
That's right. But was Dazzy Vance better than Dizzy?
No, he wasn't.
No, I don't think so.
No, he wasn't. You'd have to put Dazzy
there. Probably have to put
Dizzy. Right-hander, you would have to put Dazzy there.
Yeah.
But Paul was big, and he was going to make a bigger man than, which he did. He made a bigger man than Diz.
Yeah.
But he hurt that shoulder or something there.
Yeah, very quickly.
I see Dizzy didn't have curveball. Paul developed a good curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Paul had a good curveball.
Yeah.
And he was learning that game along as he was going along.
Yeah. Who were some of the real characters of your time? Rabbit Moranville, surely.
Rabbit was one. Casey.
And in a way, Charlie Grimm, though he was more funny than...
Well, Charlie, he had a smart way of doing it. I don't think he was anything out there.
He was no buffoon, no sir. Unusual or amusing incidents on the field, on the bench, in the clubhouse, in the hotel, on the train, or anything that you can think of involved your players or yourself?
Well, of course, man, I can tell you several of them that you couldn't do anything.
Couldn't print, huh?
So I know that we were having a meeting in St. Louis there one day, and that was a hot clubhouse. It was dirty. So Terry's going over the line up there and all like that, you know, and he says, Diz is pitching today. He says, we'll do this and do that. And about that time, it come out the door, just busted open. And it was Dizzy. He says, Terry, what the hell are you having a meeting for? He says, I'll go over. But he says, I'll tell him exactly what I'm going to throw him and when I'm going to throw him. Terry says, get out of here. But he did. He came in and said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
And I guess he sometimes
did. He was one man, but say he was going to do something on that ball field and do it.
And really do it. Yeah. 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 Well, that was an experience to listen to Diz broadcast after he got in the booth.
Oh, yes.
People, he slid into third base and things like that.
You want to cut that off a minute?
Yep.
Sure will.
Can you think of something that would be maybe your greatest thrill in baseball?
Well, I'll tell you. Let's see, when will this be out?
About a year from now.
Oh, about a year. Well, yeah, let me get something on.
Good.
Yeah. He was sports writer up there in New York.
Mm-hmm.
He was director of the Hall of Fame up until last year.
What's his name?
Kenny Smith.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's moved about 150 miles away now, but he's back doing this until after this up the of this time. Why, he'll go back.
Mm-hmm.
He's up there helping him now. And I had in mind about the speech. Mm-hmm. I don't want a long speech or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
but just hit me about my thrill that I had in baseball.
Very good.
And so I went at it this way. I don't think I was going to use it like that there, because I've got something else back there too.
Mm-hmm.
But here's something that I drew up here, oh, it's been a while back, about thrills.
Yep.
Everyone has thrill in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And my first thrill was sold to the New York Giants. And the first time I saw the Polo Grounds,
mm-hmm,
was told in 1924 I would be regular shortstop.
Right.
Now that started back when I started baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And three, the World Series, 1923. And I was a regular in 1924.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, Babe Ruth's and committee of baseball writers representing each city in the National and American Leagues. All-America team, 1927-1929. Now, while that was in existence, it was only there 5 years, I believe, it was, mm-hmm, maybe six. Well, it was Glenn, Joe Cronin, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it in 27 and 29. I've got them in there now because I had to send the original all up to the...
Yeah.
And in 1933, one World Series.
Mm-hmm.
1934 was an All-Star game. 1937 was Ward of Merit of the National League. That was the year that I quit playing.
Mm-hmm.
14
mm-hmm
years of emeritus service up there.
Yeah.
And then 1960, Arkansas Hall of Fame, and then the last National Hall of Fame. That leads right up. That's my thrill. There's nothing.
That's a lot of thrills, and it's capped off properly with that Hall of Fame.
That's it. That's you can't do any better.
No.
Can't go any further than that.
You join the greatest right there. That's wonderful, Travis. Now, would you have one game that stands out in your memory? It was where you have you can
well,
say
I had,
your best
I
game.
Had two, but I can't. There's one of them that I've got a record here somewhere, but
mm-hmm
I can't find it.
I'll be darned.
And here, as I'm coming in, I'll let you see.
All right.
No, wait a minute. We can't.
Well, after we let's keep talking. Then I'll go see what you got there.
Well, the one was in Cincinnati.
Uh-huh.
And I drove in 8 runs.
You're kidding.
Mm-hmm. And then
rare.
The other one was in Pittsburgh. I drove in 7 runs. Now,
jeez.
Pittsburgh, I've got that in there and
mm-hmm
the thing there. That was 2 home runs, a triple, and a double, I believe it was.
Jeez.
And the Cincinnati, I can't exactly figure what that was. But I drove in 8 runs there.
Wow. That's got to be a thrill. Yep. Now,
those two there were,
yep,
were pretty good. I'd have to get there's several times that hit home runs with 2 home runs in the game.
Yeah. That's also something pretty unusual. Now, after 1936, when you quit playing in the majors, what'd you do?
I managed USC in the National League.
For how long?
37 and a half, 38.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of 38, I went back to the Giants as coach.
Mm-hmm. For how long?
From 38 to 1940. As coach, and I came down with tuberculosis.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm. I had tuberculosis for 5 years, so that's just out of the baseball. That was 5 years of lost.
You obviously whipped it pretty thoroughly.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I did a pretty good job on it.
You never know it. Look at you now.
I did a pretty good job.
Well, then let's pick up around 45. What'd you do after that, after you got over the TB?
45, 46. I went with the old Boston Braves and managed a club in Jackson, Mississippi, in the Southeastern League.
Yeah.
And at the end of that season, that would throw us into
47. Yeah.
Hot called me to come back and coach with him.
Uh-huh.
So I coached Scotty in 37 and then 38.
No, 47.
47 and 48. Ferocious took over. So that was the last time I was with the Giants.
What'd you think of Drosher as a manager?
He was a good baseball man.
Yeah.
That's all I can say about him. Yeah. He wasn't. Drosher was a good baseball man. He was figured too. You have to bear down to beat him.
You know it.
He was a good baseball man.
All right, then after that, were you in baseball any other way?
I went back with the Boston Braves.
Uh-huh.
And when they moved to
Milwaukee,
I stayed with them for 11 years. I managed in the farm system from 1950 through 1960.
Wow.
I was with quite a few clubs because they'd call me and tell me to
go over there.
Yeah. In other words, I was in Bluefield, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I had a bunch of kids there that, they were good.
Mm-hmm.
And so John Quinn called me. That was on, my wife had just met me. It was in the early spring. My wife had just met me in Bluefield.
Mm-hmm.
And John Quinn called me on the next Sunday morning. We hadn't even gotten up. And he says, I want you, no, it wasn't Sunday morning, it was Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I want you in Hartford, Connecticut tomorrow afternoon for a doubleheader. So my wife and I got up from there on that Saturday morning, drove all that Saturday night, Sunday morning, and got into Hartford as the first game was just over and they're starting the second game.
Good gracious. You really covered ground.
Then I managed farm in Owensboro, Kentucky. I was 2 years in Appleton. That's the reason Appleton had that Wisconsin State League had to fold because they were too close to Milwaukee.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's see, it was Appleton 2 years. Let's see, the Bluefield was Owensboro to Bluefield, we were, and then Appleton. And then I was at Lawton, Oklahoma, 4 years for me. And then Midland, Texas, when they had that new sophomore league, the Braves sent me down there with a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then next year, which was 59, I believe it was, I went to the Siberia of baseball, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. It was cold there all the time.
Even in the summer.
And they had trips from Eau Claire to Minot, North Dakota, and to Winnipeg.
Winnipeg,
and then 500 and something miles and 600 and something miles to Minot.
How did you travel? By bus?
Three station wagons.
Station wagons.
And they were long. And then the next year, I had a, it was just soup the next year at Davenport, Iowa. Short trips, good bus. And then that was
well, now they couldn't make those trips. If they had to go from Eau Claire to, where was it, Winnipeg?
Winnipeg.
They'd have to have one day off.
No, we didn't have a day off.
No.
Oh. We'd play a ball game there. And of course, Minot and Eau Claire both were edge towns.
Yeah.
Others a little short. But we would try to leave straight up midnight at Eau Claire. And we'd get into Minot the next afternoon, 3 or 4 o'clock, each, and play a ball game. No, we didn't have any off day.
Wow.
No, sir.
That was rugged.
No, you could bet you it was rugged.
All right. So when did you finally quit managing, coaching, or whatever?
1960. 1960.
And you came back here.
Came back here, and I did it so many times when I was at Eau Claire. I'm giving this up. I'm not going to put up with this kind of stuff and all this traveling and all like that. And I said, when I get home, I'm just going to sit there. Of course, I started getting sick here or there and different things happening to me. But there was one thing that back there, we'd have to go back to 1932 and 1933.
Okay.
In 1932, I already had one bad knee.
Mm-hmm.
In 1932, sitting in the second base in the old Baker Bowl there in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
and broke a bone. bit of bone in my left knee. That was both of them then. Well, I went on the retired list, and that was it. That was it. It's going to be it because both of them had, well, I didn't have both of them in the calf then, but I had one of them in the calf then. But we had a club, my family had a club, clubhouse up on White River, Indian Bay at White River, up in northeast or southeast Arkansas.
Yeah.
We used to go up there all the time. My mother, family who had the clubhouse. So after I got home, I stayed up there a couple of weeks there for them to treat those knees.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back home. And we went on up, took my mother and family, and we went on to the lake. And they sent a messenger out of Holly Grove, Arkansas, which is a town close to the lake. And Terry wanted to know, this is in the winter now, this, Terry wanted to know if the Giants would pay for it, would I have my knees operated on?
Mm-hmm.
I told him, that was a silly question, Bill. I said, I can't walk now. I said, I'll do anything.
That's right.
He said, okay. He says, when you go home, you get things fixed up and come on up here, you'll operate on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I say they operate on both of them at the same time. They remove bone out of both of them and ligaments and things.
You had to be laid up for a good while.
Oh, I was laid up all the rest of 32.
Mm-hmm.
I went to spring training in 33, but I did make spring training and I was in shape, but I couldn't play.
You played 53 games in 33.
Yes, but that's a lot of part of the ball game. Most of them season, most of them were at third base. Johnny Burgess came down.
Yeah.
Sick and up there.
Actually, it shows you 21 at shortstop, 21 at third base, and the others would be pinch hitting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then by the next year, you were back in full.
In 24.
Yeah.
I came back strong in 24.
34.
34. I made the All-Star.
And you sure did. In 35, you had a good season.
Yeah, but 36 beat me.
Yeah,
if it hadn't been for 36, I'd have ended up 301, I believe
it
was.
Yeah, I was going to say that would have to make the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a couple of years there, anyway, that I drove in. When you're up in the 80 and 90 run batted in, that's not bad.
Yeah, well, in 34, you had 101.
But that wasn't what I've talked about. I was hitting, when we had a hit against left-handers, we started left-hander. They'd move me up in the fourth spot and not the fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa, you know, that's the only feed we'd make. And the way those boys were hitting, that Terry was hitting, and Winston was hitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I got a base hit, somebody had to score.
Sure.
They were on base, men.
One or the other, or both of them would be on base, yeah. That's great. Well, let's say, your overall memories then are very, very pleasant and favorable.
Oh, very much so. Good, graceful. Yes, we had some
wonderful times.
Great times. Had some great times.
Yeah, great times, great days, and great teams.
Now, people overlook what a family has to go through with.
I said to Mrs. Moore yesterday, the wives in my book are the unsung heroes of Major League Baseball.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
I'd go to spring training, and we'd go up to New York.
Yeah.
You'd have to stay here. The school was out.
That's right.
And then get in a car and just she and those two children drive from here to New York.
Yeah.
3 days.
Yeah.
And that was before they had these, everything you did on the paved road.
Oh, boy. I've lived, I taught at the University of Notre Dame 43 years.
Mm.
But I was raised in McAllen, Texas, down on the border. And my father was a banker, and his last 30 years before his death was over here near Marshall, Texas. And I was a Latin American specialist in literature, history, and everything in Latin America. And would go to Mexico City, to Mexico all over, to study, teach, or just travel nearly every summer with the family. We'd drive. I came real close to you dozens of times over here, and I went through Hope, you know, always going down that way. And I looked today as I was coming along on a beautiful piece of highway and saw remnants of the old US 67 over making a curve right near where the highway, the interstate is now. And I thought, boy, how did we manage 500 and 600 miles a day on those roads in those days? You could.